This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Mr. Skilling, ready and willing.
The Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Brian Watt, in for Scott Jagal. Former Enron Chief Jeffrey Skilling took the witness stand yesterday and is expected to return there today. He started his testimony by declaring he was absolutely innocent of charges that he was part of a conspiracy to commit fraud. Skilling vowed to fight the accusations until the day he dies. Marketplace's Bob Moon has more.
Skilling's tone was earnest as he admitted to being nervous testifying in his own defense, but Houston-based securities law attorney Tom Ajami, who has been following the trial, says the real reason for anxiety will come later in the week when Skilling's cross-examination by federal prosecutors is expected to begin.
I fear for him on this cross-examination.
Specifically, Ajami says Skilling's attitude was widely seen as smug when he was called to testify before Congress after the Enron collapse. But he suggests defense lawyers may feel Skilling's forceful testimony is their best defense.
The fact that Skilling is getting on the stand and exposing himself to so much risk in a cross-examination is because he and his lawyers are very concerned about the strength of the government's case so far.
Ajami says he doubts the jury will believe Skilling's assertion that many of the witnesses who agreed to plead guilty and testify against him were really innocent. In New York, I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
So, how do you say gridlock in Italian? It's a word the folks in Italy may get to know well. They finished voting in national elections yesterday, but the results aren't a sure thing yet. So far, they're looking very mixed. Megan Williams reports from Rome.
For Italy, it's a worst-case scenario. A nearly evenly split lower house led by the challenger Romano Prodi's center-left coalition, and an upper house that's almost equally divided. For a country with the third highest debt in the world, the chance of passing desperately needed economic reforms is now slim to none. Author Alexander Stile says Berlusconi can be blamed for making any economic change even more difficult.
Berlusconi has engaged in the practice of blowing up the bridges and poisoning the wells so that there'll be desert behind, which might be good short-term politically, but probably very bad for the country.
Just before the elections were held, the departing prime minister changed the electoral system, making it harder for the next government to have a majority. Both parties have warned that the current government is not likely to last long. In Rome, I'm Megan Williams for Marketplace.
Alcoa's first quarter earnings report came in after the bell yesterday. The company beat expectations by a whopping 18 cents a share. It's good news not just for the aluminum maker, but for the market in general. That's because Alcoa is seen as something of an industrial bellwether. The company kicked off the corporate earnings season for the first 3 months of 2006 with its good news after the markets closed yesterday. This morning, biotech firm Genentech hopes to follow in Alcoa's footsteps when it reports numbers before the market opens. Oil prices went up 2% yesterday, right around $69 a barrel. The Dow Jones Industrial Average climbed 21 points yesterday. The NASDAQ fell 5 points, a quarter of a percent, to 2333. The S&P closed basically flat at 1296, and you are listening to Marketplace. This summer driving season is coming and expected to drive you crazy. In a few hours, the Energy Information Administration will tell us what kind of prices to expect at the gas pump this summer. Marketplace's Jeff Tyler reports.
Wall Street traders expect oil prices will soon set new highs, topping $70 a barrel. Tight supply is partly to blame. Continued violence in Nigeria and the nuclear standoff with Iran could tighten the spigot even more. On the domestic front, some refineries are still undergoing repairs from hurricanes last summer. Petroleum analyst Philip Verlager sees more storm clouds on the horizon.
The forecast suggests that we're going to have a number of big hurricanes this year. So we could see outages and big price increases briefly this summer, just as we saw last year.
New cleaner fuel standards will also add to the cost of gas, but so far, higher prices have not slowed consumers. Compared to last year, demand in the first quarter was up 1%. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
From American Public Media.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Medtronic, alleviating pain, restoring health, extending life. Medtronic, on the web at Medtronic.com. And by Mellon Financial Corporation, helping financially successful individuals and families protect and maximize their assets through the practice of wealth management, Mellon.com. Market data and news brought to you by Reuters. The facts, without spin, as they happen. Reuters helps you stay in the know now.
This is Marketplace. I'm Brian Watt. India has become the home of a thriving IT outsourcing business that's attracting foreign investment and driving growth. But just over the border in Pakistan, IT is still a fledgling industry, for now. As Miranda Kennedy reports from Karachi, there are plans afoot to change all that.
The State Department advises Americans not to come to Karachi unless they have to. But there's no warning against Americans sending their calls here.
Thank you for calling the doctor's office. This is Alan. How may I help you?
In a flashy building in downtown Karachi, Pakistani agents are taking calls for doctors and plumbers' offices in Philadelphia and L.A.
My real name, or pseudo? Well, my real name is Shimama. My pseudo is Shirley.
Shirley is a bubbly 26-year-old in a black hijab that covers her from head to toe. She's got a degree in dentistry, but she's working here because she makes four times more answering calls.
Just find lawyers here, doctors, MBAs, people like that, because, yeah, the pay scales are kind of like that. That's one of the main reasons we started here, but then we just fell in love with it.
Asim Saber, the managing director here, ran a call center in Florida before he thought of hiring better educated workers back in his native Pakistan. So he joined TRG, which buys failing U.S. companies and fixes them by sending the work to Pakistan. He says the country always had the talent, but it suffered from an image problem.
The perception of Pakistan, you know, the political instability, you know, all of the Al-Qaeda stuff that's gone on here, the bombings, et cetera, all very true. Can't deny it, but I'll tell you something. Every time we've had somebody actually take a trip, they've gone back just saying one thing, wow.
Saber says bright new graduates are eager to get hired into what they see as a career job with a hot future. He has 50,000 resumes just sitting in his database. That gives Pakistani companies one advantage over India's more established IT industry, says Yusuf Hussain, head of the Pakistani IT Trade Board.
In a place like India, many companies have to now begin scraping the bottom of the barrel in terms of quality. In Pakistan, on the other hand, companies, I think, will jump through hoops to satisfy you.
So will the government-sponsored trade board. It's built state-of-the-art software parks to try to draw in big investment. But it doesn't help that Pakistan only has one fiber-optic cable connecting it to the outside world. Last year, the whole country's internet went down for 10 days. Saber had a tough time explaining that one to his clients. In Karachi, I'm Miranda Kennedy for Marketplace.
And in Los Angeles, I'm Brian Watt. Thanks for joining us.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.